Anakin, Tahiri, and Corran followed the Given through the cramped corridors of the Yagdul space station, their footing upset by ever more violent explosions. "Do you have any idea where we're going?" Anakin asked Corran. "The basic layout hasn't changed that much," Corran said. "We're headed down toward the berths." They reached an axis a few moments later and piled into the turbo lift, which whirred them down toward the anterior berths. Anakin almost wished the turbo lift would open to a bunch of Yuuzhan Vong, so he'd at least have someone to... That's not a wish, he realized. That's the Lambent. "Guys," he said quietly, "you'd better activate your lightsabers." Corran and Tahiri didn't ask questions. They just did it. The door whisked open, and there they were. 6 Yuuzhan Vong at the stairs. "Me first," Corran said, leaping out, lightsaber blazing. Tahiri was a blur, Anakin right behind her, but he realized he only counted 5 Yuuzhan Vong warriors outside. But the Lambent said 6. Anakin spun, almost in time. The Given struck him across the bridge of the nose with a tightly balled fist, propelling him from the turbo lift into the enemy-filled room beyond. From side corridors, 8 more Yuuzhan Vong filed into the far side of the room from where the Jedi now stood against a bulkhead, lightsabers bristling out like quills. The Given who had hit Anakin was laughing a harsh, very un-Given-like laugh as he reached up and touched the side of his nose. Something oozed off, revealing the Yuuzhan Vong beneath. "A good effort for infidels," said, taking an ampostaff proffered by one of the newcomers. He looked squarely at Anakin. "Not the Solo the War Master wishes most, though after Yavin 4, your worth has risen immeasurably." "I don't know you," Anakin said. "No, but your mother and I have met. I am Nomanor, and you may consider yourself my captive." "We'd rather not jump to that conclusion, if you don't mind," Corran said. "The odds are against you." "You must not know much about Corellians," Corran said. "Don't be tiresome. You 3 have earned respect. If you were not infidels, I might even call you warriors." "I can't say the same for you," Corran said. "What about it, Nomanor? Me and you, man to man."
"Duel you as you dueled Shedal Shai? Sadly, my duty to my people forces me to decline your offer," Nomanor said.
Tahiri suddenly began shouting in Yuuzhan Vong. The warriors looked at her, first puzzled, then angry. One turned and spat something at Nomanor. "What did you say?" Anakin asked. "The warriors with him don't speak basic, and they don't have Tizo worms. They didn't realize that Nomanor was turning down a challenge. I told them you were the slayer of Shedal Shai." "Now what?" asked Corran. "The head warrior of this bunch, Shokchoka, wants to take up the challenge." "Tell him I accept," Corran said. "No," Anakin said. "Tell him I accept. Tell him I demand my right to combat, or I will carry their names as cowards to the gods." As Tahiri translated, Anakin stepped out, lightsaber blazing. The other warriors fell back, forming a ring. Shokchoka stepped into it. Rogue Squadron cleaned up the remaining skiffs, then moved in to help weaken the Rubidic weapon's defensive perimeter. "Dozen, how's it going down there?" Gavin asked. Kip's voice came through a steady throb of Rubidic distortion. "Lost 5 starfighters. And hurry or you'll miss the party." "Hang on there, Dozen, we're on our way." Space in all her glory, followed by 2 corvettes and a heavy cruiser.
"Crefay here,"
the Admiral's voice boomed.
"Congratulations, Rogues. Excellent work. If you don't mind, we'll clear a path to Target Prime now."
"Admiral, we don't mind at all," Gavin replied.
"Hit!"
3PO squealed. "That's the idea, Professor," Han said. The Falcon bumped into the side of the freighter module. 2 quick shots from the forward laser had cut it adrift.
Now he engaged the Millennium Falcon's main engines and cranked them to full. The cargo pod lurched into motion, aimed straight at the Yuuzhan Vong interdictor. The Falcon rattled like a metal bearing in a fourth cage, but Han held her nose steady. "What in blazes are you doing?" Leia shouted. "Just keep a lookout for skips. We'll be seeing them pretty quickly." He was right. It didn't take the harrower long to figure out he was up to something. The coral skippers came howling in, blazing away at both the cargo pod and the Falcon. The trembling of the Falcon took on a different tone now as plasma bursts ate her shields. But the deciding factor for Han was the sudden bloom along the outbound rim of the freighter module. He turned the Falcon's nose up and flew. "I hope you know what you're doing," Leia said. "Relax, sweetheart," Han said, though he felt anything but relaxed. And then something stopped them, hard. The interdictor had finally gotten its lock. Han blanched and tried the repulsor loops. He was stuck. He could only watch now. The tanker module was still hurtling toward the harrower, too fast for the huge vessel to dodge without a hyperspace jump. But it was coming apart under the steady fire of the smaller ships. Han watched as its liquid contents continued, undeterred, spreading in a bizarre funnel profile wave toward the Yuuzhan Vong ship. "I don't understand, sir," said 3PO in a hopeless and subdued voice. "What could liquid hydrogen possibly do against?" "Watch and learn, 3PO," Han said. Shields went down, and the skips started taking her apart. And then, everything broke loose. Shok Choka was big, even for a Yuuzhan Vong warrior. Each ear had three large chevrons cut from it, and a mounted scar ran from his chin, sliced through his lips, and continued along the ridge of his skull. He held his ampersaff behind his back. Anakin cut his lightsaber off and held it loosely at his side. He began to circle the warrior slowly, in a relaxed, almost contemptuous manner. Calm flowed through him. Shok Choka followed him with his predator gaze. Anakin stopped, smiled faintly, then stepped into the warrior's range. The Yuuzhan Vong moved almost faster than vision could process, the rigid amphistaff chopping down. Anakin's saber burred on, and he raised it in a wide, high block. Choka, anticipating that, arrested the slash and instead lunged in to spear Anakin in the throat. Anakin retreated and dropped his parry low and wide, while his blade, slashing wildly, scored a meter-long cut through the bulkhead that only just missed Karn. Stamping and howling, Choka came on. Anakin blocked a powerful blow that carried his blade into the bulkhead for a second time in a long elliptical slash. He ducked a vicious jab, banged into the wall, and rolled forward, past Shokchoka's stamping feet and back out into the center of the room. Then, suddenly, Anakin tightened his defense so that rather than pushing the Yuuzhan Vong's blows as far away from him as he could, they were missing him by centimeters. Still smiling, he fell into the counter-rhythm of the dance, the amphistaff whipping and whirling, spearing and slashing. The warrior suddenly dropped and swept Anakin's feet from under him, something the young Jedi hadn't seen coming at all. Anakin thudded to the floor awkwardly and threw his blade up to catch the inevitable downward blow, but the staff whipped around and cut his shoulder, the deadly poisonous head slapping against the floor centimeters from his arm. Anakin caught the amphistaff with his left hand, and with his right, lifting from a prostrate position, drove his weapon through the knee joint of Shokchoka's armor. The warrior grunted and aimed a powerful punch with his left fist toward Anakin's head. But he wasn't there. Anakin bounded up and was suddenly standing above the warrior, who had overcommitted to the punch. In the split second, while Shokchoka decided whether to tumble forward or attempt to regain his balance, Anakin cut his head off. Before the body could hit the floor, Anakin bounded toward his friends.
Corrin had already seen the plan. And with a single swipe of his own blade, finished cutting the bulge-sided triangle Anakin had begun in the bulkhead with his seemingly wild parries. The other Yuuzhan Vong, stunned by the death of their war captain, hesitated an instant too long. One got a parting shot at Anakin, the last of the three to duck through the small opening. But then he was through, and in the corridor behind Tahiri, and they were all running as fast as they could manage. They passed through a pneumatic bulkhead. Anakin slashed the controls as its side closed behind them. "We need to find Berth 13, he gasped. "This way," Corrin shouted back. "How far do we have to go?" Tahiri asked. "Because my ears are popping." Anakin realized that his were too, and that he was a lot more winded than he ought to be. "Sith spawn," Corrin said. "The Given have opened the station to space. We'll never make it to Berth 13. He stopped, looked around. "Wait a minute," he said. "Follow me." He led them down a side corridor, where he paused. "I think this is it." He keyed a door open. "We might make it to the ship," Anakin shouted, following him into the room beyond. It was wall-to-wall storage lockers. "No way," Corrin said. "We're not even to the docking ring." As he spoke, he began cutting through the locks on the lockers with his lightsaber. "Check the unlocked ones, you two," he ordered. "We're looking for vac suits. This is the sector Ilya told us to go to." Anakin checked the lockers, feeling the air grow thinner and colder as he did so. Most were empty. "But what if Ilya was in with Nomanor?" "I doubt it. If he was, why such an unwieldy trap? Nomanor must have contacted the other Yuuzhan Vong to meet him, to get him off the station." "Ha!" Corrin yanked a large vac suit from one of the lockers. The next locker turned up an air pack, but no suit. Neither did the next few, and Tahiri was starting to giggle with hypoxia. "Okay, that's it," Corrin said. "You two, get in there." He pointed to one of the large lockers. Anakin grabbed Tahiri's hand and pulled her into the locker. Corrin shoved the air pack in behind them. "I'll be back. There's another set of lockers down the hall." He slammed the locker door, and they were in total darkness. Anakin felt around for the feed valve, and soon a small hiss escaped the air pack. "The walls are getting cold," Tahiri said. "They'll get a lot colder before it's over," Anakin thought. "Unless the Vong light the station up and blow it to atoms. Either way, it won't be long before we don't care anymore." The space around the Harrower birthed stars. That's what it looked like, anyway. And in astrophysical fact, that was more or less what was happening. "Keep firing, Jason," Han said, adding the forward guns to the mix.
"I see it, but I don't believe it," Jason said from the gun turret station.
A constellation of explosions burned around the Harrower now, so brightly they almost couldn't see it. The Dovin basal grip on the Falcon suddenly relaxed, and the laser beams were lancing through the hydrogen cloud to burn clots off the Yuuzhan Vong ship itself. "Keep those ships back until we hit hyperspace," Han told Jason.
"Can do,"
Jason called back. Han was gratified to see plasma boiling from the Harrower. A few minutes later, they'd left the Interdictor and the rest of their enemies light years behind. The gravitic weapon looked huge in Jaina's view as they closed in. Cathay had been as good as its word. The Red Roost and her companions had come from the defense perimeter that had successfully kept Kip's squadron at bay. Now they were setting up for the run of the gravitic weapon. This wasn't a fabled Death Star move. The Rao Roost opened up on the galaxy ship. A red stream of plasma lanced out from the corners of the Spinoza Vong. The destroyer shot thinking.
longer. He felt her shiver, probably from the biting cold. In fact, the only part of Anakin that wasn't freezing was the strip along his side where he was pressed against the younger Jedi. "I'm sorry," she sobbed. "I got you into this. If it weren't for me, you'd be back on the errant venture right now." "But I'd rather be here with you," he said. "Don't say things like that," she murmured. "I know you think I'm still a little kid. I..." She stopped, very suddenly, when he found her face with his fingers. Anakin rarely did things he didn't know he was going to do. But it had never occurred to him that he was going to kiss Tahiri until his lips were already touching hers. They were cold, and she pulled back. "Oh," she said. "Oh? That was a surprise." "Sorry." "No. Come here." She took his face in both hands and pressed her lips against his. It wasn't a big kiss, but it was sweet and warm, and it jolted through him like 10 G-forces. "Your timing is perfect," she breathed. "Wait until we're doomed to give me my first kiss." "Mine too," he said, face warming despite the cold. Something clanked outside.
"Did you hear that?" Tahiri whispered.
"Yeah, but how? There shouldn't be any air to carry the sound." He reached for his lightsaber. Something started working at the locker door. It swung open, and Corrin was crouched there, an expression of extreme concern on his face. He still had a vac suit on, but without the helmet.
"You're okay," he breathed.
"We're okay," Anakin acknowledged. "Where did the air come from?" He started crawling out of the cramped space. "I remember there was a modular backup system. I was afraid the Given had taken it out, but they haven't. I sealed up the room and pumped air in. It probably won't last long, so get into those, quick." He gestured toward a pair of smaller vac suits. As they were scrambling into them, Corrin shot Anakin a peculiar look. "What?" Anakin said. "Should I have left you two unchaperoned?" "Vaping moths, does it show?" Anakin wondered. Just once, he wished most of the people he knew weren't Jedi. "What happened back there exactly?" Leia asked. "Ask your son, he's the one with the education," Han replied. Jason turned from his own work on the power core. "I'm pretty sure I get it," he said. His mother looked up at him.
"Do tell."
"The cargo tanker was full of liquid hydrogen, right?" "That far I got. Dad dumped it all over the Harrower, and we fired into it. That didn't do anything, except the Harrower produced voids to swallow our shots. They started swallowing hydrogen as well. The voids are like quantum black holes. You reach the event horizon, which in this case is more or less microscopic, and gravity becomes nearly infinite, which means acceleration does too. When a concussion missile hits one, for instance, the matter in it is instantly compressed in neutrons, and then, blip, singularity, just like a black hole. And, like black holes, if you dump in too much matter at once, it has to queue up to get in. It starts compressing outside the event horizon, so on the way in, it undergoes fusion. And the black holes swallow most of the energy," Leia said.
"Exactly.
The light we saw was only a fraction of the energy being produced, the part that escaped. Most of it went into the singularity. We know from experience, disappearing energy taxes the Dovin Basals, right? In a few seconds, the Harrower's voids swallowed dozens of hydrogen fusion explosions. It shut them down." "Looks like all of your education wasn't a waste," Han remarked. Jason was about to add something else when the Force blindsided him with agony. He must have cried out, because both of his parents looked at him at once.
"What is it, Jason?" Leia asked.
"It's Aunt Mara," he replied shakily. "Something bad is happening to Aunt Mara."
Help her.
Mara's hand on his arm. Her eyes were clear, and her lips were quivering with her effort to speak. "Mara," he murmured. "Mara, I love you. Please don't die." Her head inclined, very slightly. He took her hand and felt the pulse there. Stronger than it had been in days, but irregular. "Now. We have to do it now," she said. "Do what? Mara, I don't understand." "Now." Her eyes closed again, and her pulse dropped away. "No. Mara." He felt the urge to hurl himself at the disease that threatened to take her away from him. "No, Luke, no." Luke heard Mara through the force. "Attack is not the answer." Then he understood what he must do. He calmed himself, and only when he felt truly centered did he reach out toward Mara again, probing her gently through the force rather than attacking her disease. But she was so far gone, there was nothing to defend, except... And suddenly, he thought he understood. One part of Mara was well, better than well, free of all disease. That's where he needed to be, not waging warfare, but strengthening, defending from the one fortress that still stood. He reached out again, this time as lightly as one of Mara's caresses, into the place where their child rested. And there he found his wife, wrapped around the baby like a Durasteel wall. "Let me in, Mara," he said through the force. "You have to let me in." He laid his hand on her arm, squeezing gently. "Luke, it's me. I'll do what I can, but you have to let me in." The wall wavered, but held. "I love you, Mara. Please." He trembled, still touching her arm. He couldn't force her. He wouldn't if he could. "Come on, Luke." Then the gate opened. And he felt another pulse, another life. He reached for his son. The child stirred, as if recognizing his father's touch. He reached back, and Luke felt little tickling thoughts, like waking laughter and amazement. It was a voice both familiar and infinitely strange. It was a voice becoming real. "I love you. I love you both," he breathed. "Take my strength." He and Mara joined like fingers twining, and like a tiny third hand, the unborn child linked with them as well. A human child. Their child. The mutual grip grew stronger, but it wasn't the desperate strength of combat or the raging power of a storm. It was a calm, enduring, and at the same time fallible, mortal embrace. The embrace of family, long separated. "Wow," Anakin said when he saw the ship waiting for them in Berth 13. It was hard not to be impressed. The given ship was simple, elegant, nearly all engine, about the size of a light transport. On board, they found that the controls were a complete mystery until Corrin pointed out they were laid out mathematically. Once that was understood, the ship wasn't particularly difficult to operate. Corrin took the controls. "Strap in and hang on. I hope this thing has the legs it advertises." It did. Anakin could barely restrain a whoop. Flew out of the dock and streaked past a patrol of coral skippers. The skips turned late, like a herd of startled panthers, and began pursuit. Within a minute, the skips must have been under top acceleration, but they looked almost as if they were standing still. As Anakin studied the sensor readouts from the co-pilot station, he began calculating a series of jumps, and began to feel less cheery. "We've got some ahead of us, closing. Heavy cruiser analogs, two of them. We'll see how well the gibbon builds shuttles there." Minutes later, Corrin was juking and jinking through heavy fire. He cut the ship onto a course perpendicular to Yakku's ecliptic plane. fighting for enough distance from the planet and its three massive moons for a safe jump. But they ran into trouble there, too, in the form of more Yuuzhan'vong ships. In response, Korin turned back toward Yat-Tul, diving toward the thick of the fighting. They whipped through the Yuuzhan'vong perimeter, shaving as near the big ships as Korin dared, which was pretty near, and dancing evasively through skips. "We're going to make it," Korin said. "The ships up front are too busy to..." He broke off as every single Yuuzhan'vong ship ahead of them suddenly turned, began accelerating in their direction. "Zeph spawn," Korin sputtered, pulling up hard to avoid a coral skipper that appeared intent on taking them out with its own mass. It dodged by them, not even bothering to fire. In utter confusion, Anakin watched the rest of the Yuuzhan'vong fleet race past them, out toward interstellar space. "They're running," Anakin said. "I don't get it. What could the Given have done to light their jets like that?" Numenor spat, staring incredulously down at the villip and its portrait of Kurangla. "But we are near victory! Their defenses crumble!" "Meanwhile, an infidel fleet desecrates and obliterates our primary ship womb." "Impossible," Numenor said. "Their ridiculous Senate could not possibly have approved of such a strike without my knowing." Kurangla snarled a sort of smile. "It would appear, Executor, that Yun Harla has abandoned you. Opinion is that you are perhaps not as clever and useful as you make yourself out to be." "Absurd. If there is an attack on the ship womb, it is unrelated to this mission." "Not unrelated at all, since you had us commit our reserves for this battle. Had they remained at the ship womb, they would have been sufficient to repel the infidels. You may be sure that the War Master will hear a most complete version of how you bungled this entire business." Before Numenor could begin another rebuttal, the villip cleared, leaving him to pace the decks of his ship in frustration. Not to mention trepidation. Jaina climbed out of her X-Wing wearily, feeling far older than her 18 years. She wanted to get in bed, turn the lights out, and stay there. She wanted Jason, Anakin, and her mother and father. And she wanted to see Mara, to find out what was wrong with her. What she got instead was Kip Duran, climbing out of his starfighter, a grin smearing across his face as he walked toward her. She watched him come until he was close enough. Then she slapped him, hard. "You knew," she said. "You knew, and you lied, and you made me a part of it." The other pilots, in the middle of post-battle jubilation, were starting to stare. "That thing we just paid so dearly to blow up wasn't a super weapon, was it? It wasn't a weapon at all." Kip straightened and folded his arms. "Everything a Vong possesses a weapon," he said. "And that footage you showed us that looked like it pulled fire out of Cern Padal's sun, that's what it looked like. But that's not what happened, is it? The Yuuzhan'vong set up a relay system of hundreds of Dubin basals, hung in a long corridor all the way to the sun. It was just a big, unwieldy linear accelerator, a way to get hydrogen and helium to use in their shipbuilding or something. But a giant gravitic weapon? No. You made that up to get us here. What was it, Kip? What did we just blow up? Or do you even know?" "I know," Kip said. "It was a world ship, a new one. Their world ships are dying, and a lot of them aren't in good enough shape to make it anywhere they can let people off. This one would have been light-speed capable, and it could have housed the populations of many of their smaller world ships. Now they have to choose between letting their children die in space or expending military resources to move them to conquered planets. Either way, it only helps us fight them. And it sends a message." "Yeah, right," Jaina snapped. "It sends the message that we're not any better than they are." "There's more to this universe than Jaina Solo, believe it or not," Kip said very quietly. "I'm sorry you feel used, and I wish I hadn't had to lie to you. But I did have to. You wouldn't have helped me otherwise." "And I'll never help you again," Jaina said. "You can count on it. If you were dying of thirst on Tatooine, I wouldn't even spit on you." And with that, she left, found the stateroom she had been assigned, turned out the lights, and wept. The next day, with Gavin Darklighter's permission, she left to find the errant venture. It's a weird thing, Corin said, as the errant venture grew larger through the transparisteel lozenge of the given ship. What's that? Anakin asked. Being happy to see my father-in-law's ship. Ah. Anakin tried to smile, but he couldn't. He'd been searching for Mara in the Force. The results were ambiguous. At times, he thought he had her, but at other times, it didn't seem like her at all. Then a staggering pain jolted through him. Aunt Mara! He gasped. Aunt Mara! Another blinding wave of agony made his knees buckle. The instant they were docked, Anakin bolted from the ship, pushing past the Jedi students who had come out to greet them, running as fast as he could toward the medical lab. Outside of the medical facility, he found Mirax, Booster, and half a dozen other people were jittering around. When Anakin burst into the scene, all eyes turned toward him. Aunt Mara, he gasped. What's wrong with Aunt Mara? Mirax embraced him. Mara is fine, she said. Where in space have you been? Is Corin with you? Anakin brushed off the question. But the pain, he began. It's normal, Mirax replied. Corin? Corin's fine, Anakin said. He'll be right here. Mirax, I felt her dying. She was. Now she's not. Somehow, in the Force, she and Luke... We don't know how, but the Yuuzhan Vong disease is gone. Completely. Then, the pain... Natural. Hideous, overwhelming, but natural. Believe me, I've experienced it twice. You mean... Come on, Mirax said. Let's go see how they're doing. Mara still looked sick. Her face was sallow and sweat sheened her brow. But she was smiling, her jade eyes filled with an unfamiliar sort of happiness. Luke knelt at the bedside, holding her hand. Luke, Mara, Mirax said. Look who I've brought. Anakin, Luke said. You're okay. Are Corin and Tahiri with you? Yeah, Anakin said absently, his attention fixed on the small bundle in the crook of Mara's arm. Wow, he breathed. Hello, Anakin, Mara said weakly. I knew you'd be here. Anakin stared down at the newborn. Are they all that ugly? He blurted. You'll want to rephrase that, Mara said, after what I just went through. Oh, I mean, he's... His name is Ben, Luke said. Oh, he's beautiful. In the Force, and... But he's all sort of squinched and wrinkly. Just like you were, Mara said. And you're really okay? I've never, ever been better, Mara told him. Everything is perfect. She looked down at her child. Perfect. As weary as it was, her smile had enough wattage to light all of Coruscant. Nen Yim walked with bowed head through the labyrinthine corridors of the great ship. K-Quad slunk beside her, strangely subdued. In the center of the vast chamber, they came to a raised dais, and atop it, shrouded in darkness, reclined an enormous figure. Only his eyes were clearly visible, glowing Maat implants that shifted through the colors of the spectrum. For a terrible moment, she believed she had been brought into the very presence of young Yuuzhan himself. K'Quad prostrated himself. I have brought her, Dread Shimra. The eyes burned into her, but it was long, tremulous heartbeats before the figure spoke. You are a heretic, Nen Yim. Bred of heretics. I have done what I thought I must for the Yuuzhan Vong. I am prepared to die for my transgressions. You have seen the Eighth Cortex, he asked.
I have gazed within it, Lord.
And what did you see there? Speak.
I saw the end. The end of the protocols. The end of the secrets. Besides those few marvels the gods have gifted us with since our arrival at the Infidel Galaxy, the store of our knowledge is nearly exhausted.
So it is, Shimra acknowledged. You alone, of all shapers, know this. Something that was not a natural hand gestured at Kaquad from the shadows. Anime, reveal yourself.
Yes, Dread Lord.
Kaquad, no, Anime, capered then. With a twist, the dead shaper hands dropped from his wrists, revealing ordinary Yuuzhanvong digits. He stripped off the masker that hid his face, and bile rose in Nen Yim's throat at what she saw there. The man she had thought a master shaper was deformed. Not scarred or modified as sacrifice to the gods, but misshapen, as one born cursed by them. His mouth was a twisted slash. His long, lean limbs twitched with a sort of mad delight. Onami is my jester, Shimra murmured. He amuses me. Sometimes he is useful. I sent him to watch you and fetch you.
You see, my sweet Nensup?
Onami crowed.
You see?
But Nen Yim did not see. She did not see at all. Yun Yuuzhan shaped the universe from his own body, Shimra intoned, his voice now modulated like a sacred chant. In the days following his great shaping, he was weak, and in that time Yun Harla tricked him into giving her some of those secrets. These she passed to her handmaiden, Yun Nichel, and thence to me. I am the gateway of that knowledge. But Yun Yuuzhan never gave up all of his secrets. Many he still holds for us, free of Yun Harla's deceptions. They await us. I have seen it in a vision.
I still do not understand, Dreadlord. The Eighth Cortex.
Silence!
The voice raised suddenly to a mind-numbing rumble, and Nen Yim found herself prostrate. She prepared herself for surprisingly, when he spoke again, Shimra's voice was again mild. In my vision, Nen Yim, you were raised to the rank of master. In my vision, you quested for the knowledge that Yun Yuuzhan holds out. He offers it, but he demands sacrifice and labor to obtain it. He requires that you pursue your heresy. Understanding that she was not to die after all. The other shapers are the dupes of Yun Harla, Shimra went on. They shall not know of this. You will labor here with me to bring the deepest secrets of shaping forth from the waking mind of Yun Yuuzhan. And before that unleashed knowledge, the infidels will fall. They are nothing. They are dead. They might have been spared, but for the infidels, who desecrated our ship womb and destroyed the new world ship there. It is nothing. They were the old. The shapers are the old. You are on the new path, the most sacred of all, Master Nen Yim. Forget what has gone before. The infidels had killed them, everyone on Banu Mir, on every world ship too old and worn to achieve faster than light speed. In her heart, at that moment, Nen Yim felt a hard rage and made a solemn vow. Up until now, the infidels had been an interesting problem to her, almost an abstraction. Now they were her enemies in the deepest sense. Now she would work to bring about their annihilation. Luke warily regarded the holographic image of Vorsk Velia, chief of the New Republic. So, you're saying I'm free to return to Coruscant? The Jedi Master asked the cream-colored Bothan's image.
If you wish, Velia replied. I want you to understand that the original order for your arrest came from the Senate, not from me. It took some time, but I have exerted the pressure necessary to have it rescinded.
I appreciate that, Chief. But I seem to remember that it was you who threatened me with arrest a few months ago. How can I be certain that this isn't just a trick to lure me back?
In point of fact,
Velia said,
I hope you don't come back.
Why is that?
Don't take me for a fool, Master Skywalker. I am aware of at least some of your activities. It is perhaps possible that some of them are useful. But though I've made the arrest go away, I still am not in a position to actually sanction your rogue activities.
In other words, you want deniability.
I have deniability, Master Skywalker. I want to keep it that way. Time being.
Velia paused.
In time, things may change.
I think I understand you, Chief, Luke said. In time, we Jedi may be your only hope, he thought.
Good. In that case, I'll bid you good day.
The Bothan nodded gravely, and his image wavered out. How could you be so calm with that preening Huttrul? Mara asked. She was half reclining on the bed, Ben sleeping, finally, in her arms. Luke sat on the bed next to her and looked down at their son. Velia's not worth the pain of anger.
You're such a softy, Skywalker, she said,
but nestled into his arms.
The Falcon showed up yesterday. When Janie gets here, it'll be a real reunion.
Yeah. Luke touched the tiny perfect digits of Ben's hand. And guess who will be the center of attention? That's you, fella.
You did it, Mara, he whispered, kissing her cheek.
We did it, Luke. Now I only want to know one thing, Luke said. That being? How long before we get to sleep through the night again? Mara snorted and patted his hand fondly.
If this one is anything like the Solo kids, I'd say at least another 20 years.
Something in Ben's gray eyes seemed to agree. This is Alexander Adams. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Edge of Victory 2, Rebirth, by Greg Keyes. This program was produced by David Rapkin and directed by Charles Bond. Executive producer, Morley Moskowitz. Abridgment by David Smith. Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Edge of Victory 2, Rebirth, is a production of Lucasfilm Limited. Copyright 2001. All rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music Master Production, copyright 2001. Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House audiobooks presentation. All rights reserved.